And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right, saving the world one soundbite at a time. Hey, listen, I'm going to number two on the Triple Dipper. It only took me an hour and 20 minutes to get there, Boomer. I mean, hey.
Hey, it's all right.
An hour and 50 minutes. What
hour
am I saying?
50 minutes.
Hour 50. Yes. We're about to go into hour three. Good Lord. All right. Okay. I'm calling this section of the Triple Dipper the race to SCOTUS, or just race to SCOTUS. It's a pun. It's a play on words. Race to SCOTUS. So the Supreme Court of the United States heard arguments yesterday regarding affirmative action. And for those who have been under a rock now for the last 50 years, affirmative action basically allows for race-based preferences in hiring or in college admissions or in whatever. It allows employer groups and colleges and that kind of thing to say, you know, quotas in race-based preferencing is okay. It's not a matter of merit. It's a matter, like for college admissions, it's not a matter of your GPA or your SAT or ACT scores. The question is, first of all, what race are you? Oh, and you're also smart enough to get in. And if you have two people of equal rank when it comes to all admissions criteria being equal, but yet one has been black and the other white or Asian, then about 14.5% of the colleges in the U.S. will say, literally, they'll tell you, we will then defer to the black person because, you know, it's a race-based preferential hiring. We've also seen times, though, where someone who was allegedly more qualified was denied entry because they didn't have enough of their quota of minority applicants. And so they took people who were less qualified over those who had done everything necessary to get in. So these things are called affirmative action. Well, so affirmative action has been out there for a while. It's got an interesting name, affirmative action. Affirmative means positive, right? It means like the big yes. We're taking affirmative action. We're taking positive action. Well, Fox News has a story. Before I get into how yesterday's arguments before SCOTUS went, Fox News has a story about the timeline for how affirmative action has navigated the court system. And by the way, I will tell you that one of the articles I've got here literally says that what we're looking at right now is, you know, it's just being hyped up and they're just using Asian people for their own purposes. I got an audio clip we're going to play in a minute of an Asian group protest in front of the Supreme Court saying what I tell you what, Boomer, let's do this. I'm going to lead off with that audio clip. So let me do this. I'm going to lead off with the audio clip of people who are supportive of the idea of ending affirmative action. One of the cases deals with basically discriminations at Harvard against openly discriminatory against Asian applicants. And the first guy who speaks, by the way, has a fairly thick accent. So just listen. You'll pick up after about a second or two. Go ahead.
If the justice rules in favor of us, it will eliminate the systemic racial discrimination against Asian, against white Americans, which is a race-based affirmative action. It will also push the American society to focus on the real issue here, which is a failing K-12 education in too many black and Hispanic community. That is the root cause of lack of racial diversity in higher education.
We have seen the data. We know the trend that Asians are being turned away, regardless they have the grades or they have the test scores, they have the recommendations, and they're being turned away to make room for other races. And all that is under the name of diversity or affirmative action, and that is wrong.
Stop anti-Asian discrimination.
Stop racial discrimination.
No more racial stereotypes.
No more.
We hope that this is going to be very impactful for all the children and future generations of students for not just Harvard, but many universities. And not just Asian students. This is about all kids. It's about getting to look at the kids as they are, each individually, for their own merit, their ability to achieve, and not for their race.
So we will take more than...
So every voice you just heard right there was an Asian member of society there to protest on the steps of the Supreme Court because they know they're being discriminated against. The two lawsuits that made their way up both came with similar issues of facts and law, and so the Supreme Court took both of them up at the same time. One was from the University of North Carolina. The other is Harvard. So, you know, they came out of different states, different circuits, but nonetheless, they made it all the way up, and the Supreme Court decided in a not-so-common manner to go ahead and take both at the same time for the same set of oral arguments because they basically dealt with the exact same set of facts and circumstances, just in different locations. So the Supreme Court took this up. Arguments were made, and it got a little interesting, to say the least. You know, our newest justice is Ketanji Brown Jackson, who is a noted liberal, and she was taking the plaintiffs, the ones that are for ending affirmative action, she was taking them to task. On the opposite side of the spectrum, by the way, she's a black woman. On the opposite side of the spectrum, Justice Clarence Thomas, a black man, he rarely ever speaks out during oral arguments. Oftentimes, he does not even ask a question. He's very deliberative. But this time, he got kind of out there with his comments. And in this case, he was, as a conservative and a black man, he was against the idea of affirmative action based upon the tone and tenor of his comments and his questions. Well, how's this been developing? What's the timeline here? So Fox News has this article dated 2 days ago. It's called A Timeline of Supreme Court Cases on Affirmative Action. And so here's how it's developed. It says, John F. Kennedy first signed an executive order directing the use of affirmative action in the federal government in the 1960s. An executive order, by the way. Executive order. It has been adopted by organizations and educational institutions across the country. And shortly after affirmative action was adopted, it began to be challenged in the courts. So the very first Supreme Court case was in 1974. A white man by the name of Marco De Funès sued the University of Washington Law School when he was denied admission, saying the school had prioritized minority applicants who were less qualified. Later on, he got into the school anyway before the case even reached the Supreme Court, so they declared it moot and did not consider it further. All right, 4 years later, 1978, a guy named Alan Back was rejected from the medical school at the University of California, Davis, which had implemented a quota system for minority students. So the court ruled in that one that the quota system did violate the Civil Rights Act. It also established the court's position on affirmative action, determining that race could be still considered in college admissions, but here's the criteria. It has to be narrowly tailored and has to serve a compelling government interest. Fast forward to 2003. Supreme Court, two cases, both against Bollinger. Grutter v. Bollinger and Gratz v. Bollinger. Both the court reaffirmed its previous decision in Grutz and Grutter that the schools could use a race-based admissions process. However, in the Gratz case, the court ruled that a point system, right, basically giving more points to minorities, could not be used because it was not narrowly tailored. In the end of that case, Justice Sandra Day O'Connor said that race-conscious admissions must be limited in time, and we expect that 25 years from now, racial preferences will no longer be necessary. Guess what? We're in front of the Supreme Court now. All right, folks, we'll talk about it more. Race to SCOTUS, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Be right back.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here, live from the Right Side Studios. Hour number three, local, state, national. We cover down on all of it, man. And like the dude just said a moment ago, solid conservative and just plain right. Hour three, Boomer. Hour three.
Man, those other 2 hours just flew on by.
I've only been gone for a few days, but I am back with everything's firing on all cylinders right now.
That's right.
All right. Man. Hey, listen, we're in number two of the Triple Dipper, the Race to SCOTUS. Race to SCOTUS. A little pun there because, like I said, they heard oral arguments yesterday on affirmative action, which is a race-based issue. All right? The Race to SCOTUS. So here's the thing. National Review did a story on this. National Review did a story, says Supreme Court has another chance to get it right on affirmative action. So the editors at National Review, they point out that the Supreme Court has been asked to rule that the continuing use of race as a factor in college applications violates the 14th Amendment. Says they've whiffed on this decision for more than half a century. They had to take the opportunity to put the matter to bed. Making his case for the plaintiffs, Patrick Strawbridge told the nine justices, that's basically the ones trying, the plaintiffs in this case are the ones that are trying to get rid of affirmative action, that the last ruling from 2003 from the Supreme Court in a case called Grutter v. Bollinger was egregiously wrong, that racial classifications are necessarily invidious. That's a bad thing. And that the toleration of them represented a glaring exception to all of the court's other jurisprudence. So what they're basically saying there is that if you look back at rulings on racial discrimination, affirmative action shouldn't be allowed to stand because the Supreme Court of the United States has so much precedent in place already with regards to denying racial preferential treatment or discrimination for any other reason. I mean, you can't have, you know, racial discrimination in firing, then why can you have racial discrimination in hiring? You can't have racial discrimination in the way you treat someone once they're in college. Well, how can you have racial discrimination in letting them in whether they get into college? And they point out in here what I said a moment ago before the break, that in the last major case, which was in 2003, that Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, while they did allow for affirmative action to continue with strict scrutiny, wasn't what I was looking for, they had narrowly tailored construction on how it could be used. Her quote was, 25 years from now, the use of racial preferences will no longer be necessary. Well, the plaintiffs are now saying, okay, here we are. When do we stop? So we're literally at 25 years. Despite his best efforts, it says the attorney, this is a great line. I'm going to read this to you because it's just too good. I'm just going to read it. So here's the deal. The attorney for the University of North Carolina, one of the two colleges, Harvard and University of North Carolina, were the two that were being dealt with in this particular case. It says, despite his best efforts, the attorney for the University of North Carolina could not explain why O'Connor's 25-year timetable was wrong, or for that matter, why it was right. He agreed with Justice Amy Coney Barrett that affirmative action was dangerous and it must be time-limited, but he assured the court that the time to end it was not now. So the question was, when would it be? He couldn't say. By what metric would the correct moment be discerned? He couldn't say. At what point would the underrepresentation of minorities become acceptable? He couldn't say. Who counts as a minority anyway? He couldn't say. Justice Gorsuch asked him if diversity was important. He said it was, but the diversity was more than just counting numbers. Justice Alito asked how that made any sense. If diversity is imperative, said Justice Alito, then there should always be a need to ensure that it's being achieved. In other words, what is the standard you're going by? And if it's not being achieved, if affirmative action is the only way to remedy that deficiency, then, and he couldn't say. So what the experts and the court watchers and lawyers and pundits are saying is that based upon the line of questioning and knowing that we have a conservative majority right now, the prevailing thought is we're going to see this overturned. By the way, when you look at things back home, 1819 News has a story today. Will Blakely wrote it, dated today. University of Alabama, SCOTUS decision on affirmative action would not impact our admissions policies. So Will points out in his article that I said 14 earlier, it's 18.9%, he says, of public four-year colleges nationally consider race in their admissions. There is no data about private colleges right now. Maybe higher, I wouldn't be surprised. University of Alabama Communications Director Deidre Stalnecker, though, said that University of Alabama does not discriminate based on race in its decision, so it will remain unaffected by the SCOTUS decision. Auburn did not reply. Interesting thing is, I just got a text a moment ago. This is from Lynn from Huntsville. I need to send this down to 1819 and let them check it out. It says, UAB is holding 80 to 100 slots of their 190 average for med school for rural and or diverse candidates. They allow a 495 MCAT score and a 3.2 GPA for these candidates. They are turning down candidates with 510, 515 MCATs and 3.8 candidates that are not rural or diverse. Asian, white, and Indian are not diverse. That's an interesting text. So what she's saying is more qualified in terms of their scoring candidates are being turned down if they are not considered either A, rural, or B, diverse. And that Asian, white, and Indian are not considered diverse. My word. And I don't know if she means by Indian, she means Native American, or I mean, I would assume that's Native American. Wow. Okay. There's that. Got a text here from John from Lexington, South Carolina. He says, as the racial and gender preferences were specifically used for Associate Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, should she not recuse herself because of her status as a benefactor of this practice? Wow. I'd forgotten about that, Boomer. Do you remember this one? Ketanji Brown Jackson, remember Biden said he was going to appoint a black woman, period, to the court.
Yes.
Now, I mean, not like she doesn't have legal credentials, but
right.
He literally said, I intend to break the glass ceiling and appoint the first black woman, meaning he was using affirmative action. I forgot about that.
I did too, till you just brought it up.
I mean, John from Lexington, man, what a great memory. I'm sitting here thinking, okay, I'm the host. Why didn't I think of that? But it's a good thing I have listeners like John. All right. Thanks, yeah, John. Thanks for that, John. Great point. What he's saying basically is she's the complete benefactor. Her job, her paycheck right now, is it because, in a sense, of at least the affirmative action mindset. How about that? So there's that. Now, the next story I've got just made me mad. Just made me mad. Military.com, which is like saying, you know, the DailyBeast.com or the military side of Politico.com or MSNBCMilitary.com. That's what it feels like. I mean, the articles on military.com have gotten so to the left. Supreme Court hears race-conscious admissions cases that could change the face of the military. I kid you not. This is a bad thing, they say. This is a bad thing. We don't, if you go away with affirmative action, literally the article says, the military might become too white. That's where we're headed with this article. Brace yourselves. Prepare. I tell you what, Boomer, I will not be able to do this justice. What time is it right now? Let's take the break. Let's do that. Let's go ahead and take the break right now. I'm going to come back. When you're going to want to hear this, especially some of you green suiters and veterans and defense contractors out there. Military.com has an article dated yesterday. Basically, the bulk of the premise is, if we do away with affirmative action, that meritocracy we call the Army, the military could become too white. The words they use, disproportionately white. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Saving the world one soundbite at a time. Got a caller on line one. Is that Jeff? Jeff from Indiana. How are you, my friend?
Doing good, Phil.
Good.
Congratulations on the addition to your family.
Well, thank you, sir. I know you went through that most recently with your son, so yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, and I found a little bit more better news last night that his wife now is pregnant. So
awesome.
We're going to have an addition to our family, too.
Awesome. Good news. Congratulations, Jeff. That's good stuff, man.
It's all good, man. Thank you. Hey, if you can identify as a male or female, I mean, who's to stop you saying for you can change your race, you can change your age, you can change your height, weight, and everything else? I mean, you know, why not? I mean, it's in law, basically, you know, you can't discriminate against, somebody who says that they're female if they're a male.
You know,
male if they're female.
That's true. When is it cultural appropriation, and when is it just identifying? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, apparently, you know, if mental illness, you can, if I'm mentally ill, I can identify as the president of the United States, I guess, for one thing. Probably be a step up, you know.
you might not get the nuclear codes, but you can identify how you want to. But, you know, you got a great point. I mean, if we're allowed to just identify, I mean, if you got kids identifying as, you know, furries or whatever they call them, then are they eligible for the pet discount at Petco? I mean, what happens there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think maybe they might need their flea pills and stuff too. Yeah. You know, you never know.
Need to have those pets spayed and neutered, is what I'm saying.
but I'm serious. I mean, you know, if you can identify, you know, anything you want to be anymore, and basically, I guess there's laws that keep you from discriminating against those people. Why not? Can't you change your race?
You know, it's a great question, but that's the wackiness that we're living in right now, Jeff. The very idea that you and I can joke about this, but yet we're joking, it's not so far removed from our current reality to believe they might not try it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know why you. I would go in front of the court, and you know, that would be my argument.
That's a great argument. If we are allowed to identify, and basically, if they're doing not only hiring preferentials on race, what if they're doing hiring preferentials on gender, and all you do is re-identify, should you be allowed to then get the job? That's a great point, man.
Boomer just
chimed in and said it's a great point.
You know, I'm a 60-year-old man, but I identify as a 15-year-old every now and then.
No. You just act like a 15-year-old. You don't identify as one.
Well, you get to act like one. If a duck quacks and a duck walks like a duck, maybe it's a duck. You never know.
Hey, Jeff, before you go, I want to change the topic on you real quick and ask you a quick question, all right? This is totally off the topic.
Go ahead.
I mean, I'm the one that says stay on topic, and I'm going off topic. I'm hearing there's a major diesel shortage right now. Are you seeing that, and what are you hearing right now?
I've heard the same thing you've heard and everything. I know the prices are going up and everything, and
yeah,
it's getting pretty steep. Thank goodness I don't pay for it. I mean, you know, correctly anyway.
So you drive for somebody. You're not an owner operator. You drive for somebody.
Oh yeah, you couldn't give me a truck. There's no way. You could give me a free one. I'd sell it tomorrow.
Well, all right, but you're not seeing pumps that are shut down or anything right now.
No, not yet. And, you know, like I say, it's what's going to happen if it does become a diesel shortage and stuff? It's the world's going to come to a stop and everything, but I guess we're going to have to import something.
Well,
we're going to start.
I got.
And right now, I guess this is the time of year that they change the formulas. And
yeah.
Right now, I think I'm in the winter blend because I'm not getting as good a fuel mileage as I used to.
Well, they're doing. I think they have changed the blend, and they've also shut down a bunch of refineries for annual maintenance. It's just the wrong time, apparently. But all right, man. Well, I appreciate you, Jeff. You stay safe on the roads, bud.
Thank you, Phil.
All right, we'll see you. Hey, listen, I am in number two of the Triple Dipper, the race to SCOTUS. I got a series of texts here, and by the way, I got a text from Jay from Hartsel. He says, I served with the 3rd ACR. By the way, I had family members with 3rd ACR, too. So appreciate you, Gary Owen. But I served with 3rd ACR. My brothers came in all different colors, but the only color that mattered to us was green. Absolutely. And that's what I'm seeing, by the way. I'm reading this article from military.com. It just infuriates me. Military.com, as of yesterday, talking about the Supreme Court hearing race-based admissions cases for colleges and universities. It says the Supreme Court heard arguments over the practice of race-based admissions, with military and national security experts waiting for a decision that could alter the demographics of who wears a uniform. Not really. Elizabeth Preligar, the U.S. Solicitor General, described race-conscious admissions as vitally important to our nation's military, pointing to the need to have a diverse group of students in ROTC programs and the nation's service academies. I don't disagree, but let's understand something. The military, of all institutions, is supposed to be a meritocracy. You earn the right to rank. You earn the right to promotion and assignments. You earn the right to have special duty. You earn the right to even get in because the entry criteria have more of what the law calls bona fide occupational qualifications than the average job. Anyway, says the individuals who are entering college today, says Elizabeth Preligar, the U.S. Solicitor General, are the closed universe of individuals who are going to be eligible for leadership in the military in 20 to 30 years' time. Basically, what she's saying is, don't screw it up. We need to make sure that we have race-based preferential hiring for the military, too. Well, that's just ridiculous. But here's the paragraph that really got me. The concern among those affiliated with the military, says one particular pundit. No, I'll take it back. It's the author of the article. The concern among those affiliated with the military is that if the court, with its six conservative justices, ends the practice of considering race for universities, it would leave the service branches with a pool of officers that is, quote, disproportionately white to lead enlisted service members who are far more diverse, a problem military leaders have pointed to for years as creating tension in the ranks. Military leaders have not pointed to that for years, you jackwagon. And oh, by the way, I have never in 30 years of service myself seen the tension in the ranks they want to talk about. I had amazing people of all racial demographics in the ranks with me, over me, serving alongside me, serving me as I led. And I'm just telling you right now, affirmative action for the military is a bad idea. You don't want to give people jobs because of anything other than their ability to do that job, especially when other people's lives are on the line. It talks about the fact that, you know, 76% of all officers are white in 2020 compared to 67% of the white population of active duty enlisted. That's only a few percentage points off. And then it goes on to say some branches like the Air Force have been setting goals and shift their numbers. But, here's the but, if the Supreme Court strikes down the ability to use race in university admissions, then some people worry that the practice would make those changes happening and seriously harm officers in the officer corps. Here's my do a good job recruiting. You know, it's not about admissions. It's about going out and finding the right people. I guarantee you, go into the student body like they did with me and say, hey, you look like a future officer. Would you like to try out for an Army scholarship? That's what happened to me. How about this? Quit with the crap about affirmative action is necessary. And remember, the Secretary of Defense and a former chairman of the Joint Chiefs were black men. How about it's very possible? And it was all done on merit. I got more on this. I got more. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. Well, I've had somebody that held on even part of the last segment and through the break, and so I'm going to jump right to their phone call because I appreciate their time. Line two, Brian from Huntsville. Brian, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Phil. First time caller, long time listener. Love your show.
Thanks so much.
As a career Army Reserve officer, I'm not going to go down the rabbit trail that you just talked about. The point I wanted to make with the fallacy of affirmative action as it has continued is it almost always only looks at one piece of diversity, and that is African-Americans or blacks. 60 years ago when it started, that was the minority. But now the United States is a much more diverse population, and almost never are there considerations for Asian-Americans or any other minorities. And so if you were going to have affirmative action, all of those minorities should be included, not just African-Americans.
It's a great point. You know, one of the justices, I think it's Samuel Alito, went down that same line when he was questioning the defendants in the case. He asked them what qualifies as a minority, and they didn't have a good answer. You know, do you include Native Americans? Do you include Hispanic? Do you include Asians? Well, one of the lawsuits that they're up there about right now is Asian American discrimination at Harvard.
Yeah, and I would point to 25 years ago, our three sons attended Grissom High School, and everybody used to call it Lily White. Well, the fact is, about 15% of that population at that time at Grissom were Asian Americans. But that wasn't counted. The only thing that counts in the desegregation lawsuit is African Americans and everybody else. And
you know, it's funny you say that.
It doesn't make any sense.
It's funny you say that, Brian, because I'm a graduate of Grissom High School too. A little before that, I graduated '83. Let's put it that way. But I would say it's about the same when I was there.
Yep.
Sure enough. But then you know, it depended on where you were in town. The zip code is what defined where you went to school. But anyway, hey, Brian, thanks for hanging on, man. Appreciate you hanging on through the break.
Sure.
Hey, by the way, thanks for your service.
Thank you. For
yes,
your,
sir. Absolutely.
You,
yeah, so this whole thing about race in the military and the idea that, I mean, this goes back to it's systemically racist. We've got extremism in the ranks. I mean, the very idea this article is saying that they have one guy named Joe Reeder, who's a graduate of West Point, who wrote one of the briefs in favor of not doing away with affirmative action because, in his words, he said that it's absolutely necessary to maintain this so that we get a diverse group of officers. I don't care about diverse group of officers. I mean, what I'm saying by that is I believe we'll have diversity. I believe we'll have the diversity, but we got to have the merit first. And that's where the argument falls flat. How do you look at the private who has a horrible leader in combat and say, yeah, but he met the racial quotas? How do we do that? I mean, do you remember the scene, if anybody ever watched Band of Brothers, there was the scene, Boomer's like, yeah, thumbs up. So, Boomer, then you remember the scene, and I'm trying to think where they were in battle, but Dick Winters had just moved up to be the battalion commander. He was not, the company commander. He was not the platoon leader anymore. Wait. Easy company. Yes, he was battalion. So all said and done, though, they had that one guy who had gotten the job because he was kind of entitled. He was from a rich family, and he got a job so he got some combat experience to look good when he got home. And he went into combat. It was a complete failure. Fell apart. Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's laying down behind the haystack, didn't know what to do. Everybody say, what do we do, sir? People are dying.
Yeah, and he just was there.
Because he was the wrong guy. He got selected for all the wrong reasons.
Hmm.
Yeah, Band of Brothers.
Band of Brothers. I'm going to go watch all that now.
I'm saying.
So good.
I think my favorite parts, this is a total rabbit trail. My favorite parts are at the end when they interview the actual guys, and they would talk about what it was like to lay in the cold and the snow at Bastogne, That was done so well.
Yes.
All right, I will say this. On this article, back on topic, Boomer, would you let me stay on topic, please? Would you just let me? But what I've got here in this article from military.com, I do take heart that at the very end of the article, they finally point out, I take it back. Let me jump back. This guy, Reeder, who is a West Point grad, who also served as an undersecretary of the Army for 4 years, he wrote a brief and says he has 35 top former military leaders, including four chairmen of the Joint Chiefs, as well as service chiefs from the Army, Navy, and Marine Corps and Air Force, that all believe that we need to have affirmative action. He says, If a young black soldier can't look up in the hierarchy and see from time to time a Colin Powell, he's not going to fight, and I wouldn't either. Well, Reader, you are a failure as a leader then. Because it is not about skin color. When the bullets are flying, those bullets, by the way, do not look at skin color. The enemy does not look at skin color. The enemy sees the green uniform that they're wearing. The enemy sees the markings on the jet that they're flying. The enemy does not see skin color. And I tell you what's going to wind up happening. A good leader, one who is put there for the right reasons, who has the gift of leadership and the skill set to go with it, is going to look at that young man or young woman and say, "Follow me." And they're going to follow up the hill regardless of skin color, because that's what leadership does. I will say this, though. I take heart in the fact that at the end of that particular article from military.com, it says, however, here's the however, like just a few paragraphs before the very end. However, briefs have been filed in opposition advocating for ending race-conscious admissions, citing national security concerns. The Pentagon's, quote, use of racial preferences are diluting the quality of military officer leadership. The Veterans for Fairness and Merit, a group that, according to its press release, includes 21 Medal of Honor recipients, 45 former POWs, and 122 retired generals and admirals. You know what those were? Those were all the people that didn't have politics in their military service. Their filing goes on to argue that racial preferences are antithetical to the selfless servant colorblind culture necessary for the military to prevail in the battlefield. Yes, it is. You teach those kids, when you get here, the only color you have is green. And the only job you have is the one you're given. And the only hill you take is the one the brother or sister right next to you is taking with you. And you don't look at color. And if you think that you're going to teach them that color is the way to lead in the military, guess what? You're going to be a failure as a leader. Got a caller on line one, Boomer, do we? Yay, nay? No? Okay. All right. Listen, let me move forward on this. Ketanji Brown Jackson, who, by the way, I'm still getting over the fact that I had not even thought about this. Ketanji Brown Jackson literally was hired as a matter of racial preference. I'd forgotten this. John from South Carolina is the one who sent that in. And what a prescient point. So Ketanji Brown Jackson, though, clashed with the anti-affirmative action lawyer during Supreme Court arguments. Says her question, why is it that race is doing anything different to your members' ability to compete in this environment in comparison to a number of other factors involved in admissions? Jackson asked the Students for Fair Admissions lawyer Patrick Strawbridge. It's in the context of all the other factors the admission is looking at, Jackson added. So Ketanji Brown Jackson began to take issue. Strawbridge argued that schools that use affirmative action are making distinctions upon who it will admit, at least in part, on the race of the applicant, and some races get a benefit while some don't get a benefit. But Jackson went on as one of the most vocal justices during the early stages of Monday's argument, going back and forth on several occasions. And later, she and Strawbridge sparred over whether UNC, University of North Carolina, puts race in front of its application reviewers. Jackson also noted that schools often consider other things like non-race characteristics, like whether they're veterans or whether they're parents or whether they are parents in their admission process, as if somehow that's okay. Well, I'm gonna tell you, she got a point. That is the greatest point. She got appointed based on her race and gender first, because that was the number one criteria that Biden said he had in selecting her. And she's up there arguing. That's a great point. And I hate that I didn't think of that myself. But on the opposite side of the spectrum, conservative versus liberal, Justice Clarence Thomas, according to National Review, he really did a lot of speaking up, very uncharacteristic. Justice Thomas is apparently often the justice who will not say anything. He did this time. He said a lot. Justice Clarence Thomas presses from National Review. Justice Clarence Thomas pressed North Carolina Solicitor General to explain how the University of North Carolina defines diversity during oral arguments. Here's what Thomas said. He said, "I've heard the word diversity quite a few times, and I don't have a clue what it means. It seems to mean everything for everyone." Students for Fair Admissions has challenged the race-based admissions policies of both Harvard and UNC, accusing both schools of discriminating. Thomas asked UNC's Solicitor General, North Carolina's Solicitor General, to to offer a specific definition of diversity, and they couldn't. The mechanism there is that, this is what the Solicitor General said, the mechanism there is it reduces groupthink. People have longer, more sustained disagreement. It leads to a more efficient outcome. In other words, if we have more diversity, it's better for everybody. Okay, I get it. Don't discriminate against, but don't discriminate for, is what we're talking about here. That's me talking. Justice Thomas said he doesn't put much stock in that because I've heard similar arguments said in favor of segregation, too. I mean, he was coming out. He was there. Later, Thomas asked about the percentage difference between a non-racial approach and the school's race-conscious approach. Park answered that around 1.2% of the whole applicant pool is affected by the program, to which Thomas asked, so do you think that a 1.2% marginal difference is enough of a compelling interest to continue a race-based program? I mean, if you're race-based, meaning you're treading on thin ice already, why are you doing it for 1%? Wow. I got a caller on the line, Boomer. Let me do that real quick. I'll grab that before the line. Before the next commercial. Let me grab. Is it line one? Ian from Huntsville. Ian, how you doing? Did we lose him?
Hey, my name is Scott.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. He was writing this down, and I was reading faster than he was typing. Scott, how you doing?
Hey, I'm good. So I'm a reserve officer myself, and I didn't know if you knew this or not. First off, I appreciate your service.
Thank you, sir. You too.
And now for any board files, the picture is no longer included. And so the idea that you're going to hire someone or promote someone based on race, that doesn't happen anymore.
So the old days of the DA photo being so important to the packet are gone, huh?
Yeah. You know, they might request it for on the wall, you have your chain of command.
Right.
But for board files, they don't have that anymore. That's done. And the fact that I graduated in 1983 as well and been in the military for a long time, I will tell you that, just like you, I don't see the racism in the military. It might be in some pockets here and there, but the whole idea that the military is a racist organization is wrong.
I totally agree. If you came across a one-off racist, that's a person. But the idea that racism is systemic, I've never seen that. And I've got multi-generations of my family that were career Army and never saw it.
Right. We all swear. We all lead, you know, the same. We all work, you know, in the military, I think, is a good place to show what you can do through your own efforts. Yeah. And taking the politics out of your career.
Absolutely. Scott, so you're still in right now?
I'm still serving.
All right, man. Appreciate your service. Thanks so much.
All right. You have a great day.
You too. All right, Boomer, perfect place for a break. That's my segue right there. Appreciate that. What a great audience, man. I got texts over here. Wendell from Baton Rouge, Brandon from Athens, Gil from Douglas. I got to get some of these texts read before we get off the air. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, covering some ground all over North Alabama. Hey, listen, I got to tell you guys, just love Coffee Cafe. If you have not checked it out lately, you just got to. Now consider this. Both locations in our listening area, one on Hughes Road in Madison, the other on South Parkway in Huntsville, both locations, great locations for just kind of hanging out. I mean, they've got... You can use their Wi-Fi. You can meet friends there. You can read a book. You can actually, they got games on the shelf at the Madison location, if I recall correctly. And the menu is great. You can go there for a break. You can have lunch, breakfast, lunch, or dinner. But the thing you might want to consider is, what a place to get away during the day. Take your lunch break and just go hang out and chill at a place that is designed for you to chill while you enjoy a cup of coffee or something good to eat. So, yeah, Just Love Coffee Cafe, two locations, one on Hughes Road in Madison, the other on South Parkway in Huntsville. Check it out, and please tell them you heard about it on Right Side Radio. All right, let me jump over to a caller who held on during the break, Mark from Owens Crossroads. Hey, Mark, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great, Phil. Hi.
Hey, yeah.
Listen, I served in the military. I'm the submarine guy from Owens Crossroads.
Yeah. But,
I didn't see any racism in the military. I think I've said that before on the show. But what I wanted to say is, you know, prior to 1960, I can see where there could have been a cause. America needed to change, not just the military, just in general. And I think once those changes were implemented, it needs to be exactly what you were saying, based on merit. It has to be merit. I mean, this is 2022. That dog ain't going to hunt anymore. We're not going to go back 60 years and think that America is like it was then. It's not. They have equal opportunity. And something else I wanted to say, Barack Obama was the most qualified person in America to bring the country to unity when it comes to racism.
Yeah.
Whether it be in the military or not, and he didn't.
He
failed miserably. In fact, it got worse.
Yeah.
He had a white mother, a black father. He was a black man. He had all the qualifications to make things happen. Now, I think Clarence Thomas, who, by the way, is also married to a white woman, and not that any of that matters, but he's got the right perspective to put things in perspective. And once you do that, you can get that unity. Unfortunately, you know, he's a Supreme Court justice, so he's only got so much say. But he's on the right track. If Barack Obama would have been more like Clarence Thomas, then the country, I think, would be in a better place, and we wouldn't be having all these issued conversations.
Yeah.
One more thing.
Yeah, man.
One more thing. Barack, I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry, Phil, but I think he blew it.
No, well, no worries, man. I agree with you completely. I think Barack Obama did blow it. He had the opportunity to really make something. And he chose not to. His version of healing was a beer summit after he had just embarrassed people on a race-based a notion of his own. But, Mark, we got to go, man. Appreciate the call. Thanks again for your service, as always. Call in whenever you feel like it. Yeah, and by the way, we've had a great show. I got two, Boomer, I got two of my three dippers.
Hey, that's pretty good for, you know, pretty good for, you know, a couple of days off and a lot of emotions. And
yeah. A couple days off, just resting, kicking my feet up. Right. No.
But they were great dippers.
But they were good dippers. That's why we only got two of them done.
Exactly.
But I did get asked, by the way, someone asked, could you please read out that – I had two people that want me to read out that that text string, it's tweet string, actually, that Charlene had sent to me. So I'm going to read it again to wrap up the stuff, going back to the issue of pandemic amnesty. Matthew J. Peterson, you can find him on Twitter at Doc, that's D-O-C, at Doc MJP. He says, hey, sorry you lost your job because of the vax that doesn't work and your grandmother died alone and you couldn't have a funeral and your brother's business was needlessly destroyed and your kids have weird heart problems. But let's just admit we were all wrong and call a truce, eh? It's too bad we shut the entire economy down and took on tyrannical powers that have never been used before in this country. Looking back, you should have been able to go to church and use public parks while we let people riot the streets, but it was a confusing time for everyone. Hey, I'm sorry we scared the hell out of you and lied for years and persecuted and censored everyone who disagreed. But there was an election going on, and we really wanted to beat Donald Trump, so it was important to radically politicalize the science, even though it destroyed your children's lives. And okay, yes, we said unvaccinated people should die and not get health care while never questioning Big Pharma. But we're compassionate people, which is why even though we shut down the entire economy and bankrupted the nation and caused inflation, you're welcome. Let's be friends. That's a summary. And yeah, totally agree. All right, folks, back here tomorrow, too. Boomer and I both will see you then. Have a great night.